In association with NintendoWorldReport.com and Radio Free Nintendo, you're listening to Reset Button. For this month's edition, I'll be talking to Hal Barwood, formerly of LucasArts, to talk about his space-faring RPG, Big Sky Trooper. Hal was great to talk to, so I hope you'll enjoy the interview. With that said, let's go ahead and get started.
Take your protein pills and put your helmet on. Ground control to Major Tom.
8, 7, 6.
Commencing countdown, engines on.
All right, well, the first question that I always ask people for this feature is, how did you find yourself in the gaming industry?
Well, it's sort of a long story because I'm an old man now. But I began by just designing a lot of games, starting when I was in early high school, I guess. Mm-hmm. But that was a long time ago. That was in the 50s. And back then, the games were paper games, as we now call them.
Right.
So I didn't look forward to a career designing, you know, board games.
Right.
And so, although I was very interested in games in general, and that kind of went on a back burner while I got much more interested for a long time in movie making.
I see.
And I wound up going to USC Film School and had a career in the movie business.
Mm-hmm.
Somewhere along in the middle of that, however, computers sort of became accessible.
Right.
First of all, for me, was one summer when I was still in film school, I was back in my hometown in Hanover, New Hampshire, where I grew up, and where the computer language called BASIC was invented.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a big time-sharing machine there, and some GE thing down in some basement that I never saw. And then scattered around the campus were rooms full of teletype machines, whacking away in a cacophonous din at 10 characters a second.
Wow.
And so, and on endless sheet rolls of paper, like toilet paper, you know, coming out of there. And the very first thing I did when I was able to, you know, learn what BASIC was all about was teach the machine to play rock, paper, scissors.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, so that was kind of the beginning. But then years still went by, and eventually machines like the Apple II showed up.
Right.
And then I realized I could actually get going, so I rolled up my sleeves and I realized after fooling around with BASIC on an Apple II that it was so slow it was useless.
Mm-hmm.
I taught myself 6502 assembly language and I built a really long and complicated RPG for the Apple II.
Very cool. Well,
you can still find it on my website and play it with an emulator that's there.
And that's finitearts.com, right?
Yeah, it is. Yeah.
Great.
Well, anyway, in the middle of building that game, I went off and made a movie, and when I came back, the market for Apple II products had collapsed. So it didn't directly launch me, but a few years later, I had already made the acquaintance of several people at what became LucasArts.
Mm-hmm.
And they were looking for someone to come in and do a game, a new Indiana Jones game.
Right.
And so they looked at me, and they were a little bit, you know, dubious about it all, because, you know, how is this Hollywood screenwriter guy? Does he know anything about interactivity?
Right.
And when they saw my game, even though it was, you know, completely obsolete by then, that gave them confidence, and they hired me. So that's how it happened.
And
that was my lucky break story.
Gotcha. And what had attracted you to LucasArts?
Well, I lived about 3 miles away in Marin County, California.
So just ease of transportation, basically.
Yeah, and you know, it's a small world anyway, and I happened to make the acquaintance of several people there. I went to film school with George Lucas. He's an old friend of mine.
I was actually doing a little bit of research, and I saw that you had actually worked on THX.
Well, I did some title stuff for THX and some radar. Back in the days, but when computer graphics were done with high contrast, you know, slides that came off some Xerox machine somewhere, you know, well, I was doing that.
Okay. All right, well, I'm guessing before Big Sky Trooper goes into development, it's probably somewhere around 1994. Where were you as far as your game development career at that point?
Well, actually, it went into production, it didn't go into production exactly, but it got going in 91.
Oh, really? Okay.
There's a story here.
Okay, go for it.
Anyway, I had finished the Jones game we just spoke about,
mm-hmm.
which turned out very well. And in those days, I've since renewed my affection for adventure games. But in those days, I was pretty tired of them.
Mm-hmm.
Jones turned out really well, and I'm very proud of it to this day, in spite of its, of course, very dated look and feel. But nevertheless, I would rather do sort of action adventure stuff than adventure games.
Right.
And I also had a hankering to get involved in the console world, which was really getting going, and I thought PCs were just a little bit not quite there. Mm-hmm. So I wanted to do a console game, and that in those days meant SNES games.
Right.
So I persuaded the company to do that, and then it just turned out to be a long, long slog and a nightmare.
How so?
Well, it took 4 years.
Well, yeah, I guess there's that. But I mean, was it just I can't imagine it was the trouble was in acquiring like a development kit from Nintendo, was it?
Oh no. What it was kind of shaky management in the company. Mm-hmm. I think that's still an ongoing problem at that company.
Okay.
They just changed presidents yet again. Mm. And anyway, there was the difficulty of finding resources. You know, programmers would come and go. They would come. They would not be able to produce. They would go. The art style took a while to get going. We had trouble finding people who knew how to do tile art that was any good and that kind of thing. And those problems never left. I think, as a veteran game developer, I've observed over time that the process of building a game has a culture that surrounds it, and it's a little bit like a small company.
I see.
Once that culture is established, it seems like you can't shake it. It depends on the people involved, of course, but there seems to be a pattern that emerges, and once it emerges, it's very hard to change it.
Right.
So, although I'm very proud of Big Sky Trooper, I still love it to this day. And mm-hmm. In fact, I played through it about 4 months ago. Mm-hmm. And I'll tell you about that if you like. But, it was a miserable experience getting it done.
Well, you know, it's a labor of love, you could say.
That is exactly right.
All right. Well, so for people who don't know what Big Sky Trooper is, how would you pitch it?
I would say it's a silly spacefaring RPG. Mm-hmm. For people who are either young or young of mind and
there
heart.
There you go. Well, I mean, you know, going through it, it's got a really light, you know, nature to it. But there's also some snarkiness in there that I think is maybe what appeals to, you know, older kids or even young adults, is that it's kind of got it reminds me of Earthbound in that way. It's just kind of a very sly wit.
Well, that's on purpose, of course. Mm-hmm. As much as is there, it's pretty spare, but it's not based upon, but was inspired by Bill the Galactic Hero, mm-hmm. and which is a satire of mercenary soldiering. In the far future, and I just thought it was fun. You get tricked into joining up by this creepy recruiting sergeant right
sure,
at the very
sure.
beginning, and then later on in life you find out that he got demoted for recruiting you in the first place.
Exactly,
and
yeah.
he resentfully helps you with your power ups as you go along. As long as occasionally you go off and find him something that he wants, some kind of new and shinier medal.
I just love that, you know, it's like he's like cutting you a break, so he's going to bring you in as a 21-star general.
Yeah. We picked that number because we worked backwards. I knew at the end you had to have 99 stars.
Okay.
And so the question is, how many power, when you track back through the game, how many of those could you earn? And we wound up 79, so okay, you're a 21-star general.
There you go. All right, so it starts development in 1991, ends development in 1995 when it's released. So along the way, obviously, you know, there were probably a lot of false starts and stops and so on and so forth. But aside from just that kind of thing, what would you say was the largest hurdle to overcome during the development?
Oh, gee, the largest hurdle with a really awful system like SNES.
Would you really categorize it as awful?
Well, I mean, no worse than all the other console machines, but mm-hmm. all the other console machines were designed to be made for no money. Mm-hmm. And they had very, very limited graphics abilities. I think in a SNES you could transfer 6K per frame or something like that from mm-hmm. the ROM into the actual memory. And so you had to be very careful what you were going to update. But the big problem was we were a third-party developer.
Yeah.
And everyone has to understand that when you're building for consoles, especially in those days which had carts,
right.
that the cost of inventory was extremely high. And a company that's going to develop for that and publish, in this case, we were the developers at LucasArts and JVC was the publisher.
Right.
They're going to take a huge risk because you have to go and decide how many you're going to build and then send a check to Nintendo and they make them in Japan. And you have to order basically them all at once. There's no easy way to order a few, and if it takes off, you can order more because they've got to come over in a container.
And that's actually the first I've ever heard of that. So you're saying that...
This is the old days. It's all changed now.
Oh, yeah. I'm sure now it's different. But I mean, even for the Super Nintendo, I'd always figured that, you know, maybe they had some sort of plant where they made the carts. But that... So LucasArts is literally sending a check to Nintendo saying, you know, we need this many.
JVC,
and then they send them to JVC. Like, that's... Wow.
Now, what that meant for me, practically, was that I had at my command an 8-megabit cart. Well, that's a way of inflating a cart which was occupied 1 megabyte of memory.
Right.
And getting this game shoehorned into that 8-megabit cart was really tough going. Wow. And developing almost any kind of save game feature was tough going. Getting the sound to fit in was tough going. And since a lot of this stuff happened incrementally, we wound up overflowing the cart again and again and again. Mm-hmm. We'd be going great, and then we thought that we had the ability to do the boss arenas as part of the levels, and then we found out, no, you can't do that. We're overflowing. So we had to go and make special little arenas where the bosses would all be. And then we would put some music in, and we'd find out, oh, my God, we have to throw out, you know, 100 tiles. You know, it went on and on. It was really tough to kind of do that sort of development. Hmm. Now, the result is when you're done, I mean, it plays, you know, fluidly. So that's really nice.
Yeah. I mean, some of the guys that I've spoken to, I've talked to them about developing on the Nintendo Entertainment System and then the Super Nintendo. And to a certain extent, they've said that, you know, the really drastic hardware limitations sort of in its own way inspired creativity. Would you say that was the case for you?
They're being very kind, and that's people say that about directing movies too.
Uh-huh.
Production managers are always want to tell you when you're the director of a movie. I've been in the position to tell my directors this.
Mm-hmm.
You know, hey, look, you know, use your inspiration here. We haven't got any money. You can't have any extras. I'm sorry.
Oh no.
Oh my God. Well, you know, sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't. And we did exercise our creativity, and I think we squeezed an awful lot into an 8-megabit cart. But here's the further problem was. You know, JVC could not take the risk on a really expensive cart, so we had very, very tight memory on board for save games,
mm-hmm.
which we did good save games, but it required a lot of very, very careful thought of how you're going to organize save games to make them work.
Right.
And I've been through that a few times, actually, and you'd be amazed at how much time and effort is involved in trying to squeeze a save game into one of these tiny little chunks of memory. I think we had... 256K or something like that for the whole darn thing.
Wow.
Do four save games. And so, yeah, it was really amazing that we actually got anything saved.
Mm-hmm.
But the other problem was Nintendo.
Yes.
Because at the same time, we were doing our measly little 8-megabit carts, which had been kind of the standard for 2 or 3 years on SNES.
Mm-hmm.
Now Nintendo comes along, and because they can afford to, you know, sell themselves carts at bargain-based prices,
uh-huh.
here comes Donkey Kong with a 32-megabit cart.
Wow.
we just cannot compete with that.
Yeah.
And so you just get lost.
Well, yeah, I mean, you know, obviously Nintendo's going to keep all the best goodies for themselves. But, all right,
well,
so...
I think they've been willing to sell us...
Which is at a high price.
...at 32-megabit carts, but mm-hmm. JVC would never dream of buying them.
Mm-hmm.
Now, a lot of that kind of barrier to entry sort of thing, which was affecting me, is gone with the advent of DVDs and all kinds of disc stuff.
Right. Well, something that I was really curious about was how did, or to a certain extent, does LucasArts treat an original property when it comes to game development compared to a title based on one of their other licenses like Star Wars or Indiana Jones?
In a word, badly.
Really?
They've never been able to figure out how to do intellectual property. They're cushioned by their ability to fall back on Jones and especially Star Wars.
Mm-hmm.
And as a result, they've never developed internally, I don't believe. This is my view, not the general view of the world or anything, but I just don't think they ever developed the internal conversations that need to be had in order to really, really think hard about what you need to do to make intellectual property work. And I say that in contrast to companies that live or die by it.
Right.
If you look at a company like Naughty Dog, or you look at a company like Insomniac, or even Sucker Punch, those are all three wonderful American companies that just turn out intellectual property one thing after another, and it's astonishing.
Right.
So, and I think they do it because they know that they're going to live or die, and they don't have Star Wars in the background. Mm-hmm. And so they work much harder at it. LucasArts wanted to do intellectual property, and I actually got loose to do a couple of things that now I look back, I wish probably I hadn't. Mm-hmm. But I think that that's a failing of that company.
I'm honestly a little surprised you said that, because, I mean, when people think about, especially the LucasArts games of that era, there are so many of those really memorable adventure games that you think of, you know, like...
Well, I think if you look at those games, you see that they started to peter out toward the middle 90s.
Well, I mean, yeah, I mean, obviously, but I mean, you think of those like Tim Schafer titles, and, I mean...
You have to remember that Tim's wonderful titles, he's a very, very talented storyteller and designer, and I love his games, but they never sold very well.
No, they didn't.
So, at least not the original ones.
Right. I
mean, they're very famous, and rightly so.
Yeah, I mean, especially now that Secret of Monkey Island's kind of found new life.
Well, Monkey Island is the one original piece of property that got developed into a franchise. They're
right.
Still doing it today. They've kind of offloaded it to Telltale. But they're still going on.
All right, well, so what was the internal reception to the game once you had finished it?
Complete indifference.
Really? Just get it out of there on the shelves?
Yeah, it was an obligation that we had through JVC, and we sort of fulfilled it, and they didn't want to hear about it anymore. And anyway, so much for that.
Yeah, and how was it received commercially?
Well, I don't think it did very well. I don't think that JVC ever made very many carts, and I don't know how many they did make. I never was told. So it was a very modest little game. I think it deserved better. I certainly liked it. I still like it. I think that when I look at it on my little Dingu Digital A320 handheld emulator, which I am doing as we speak, it's fantastic. It just looks great on that little machine.
Yeah.
And I got so excited about 4 months ago that I actually played through the whole darn thing again. And
how does it hold up for you as the person, you know, you were the driving creative force in this game?
Well, I love it. It's one of my favorite games that I made.
Mm-hmm.
It's a solid, really solid playable game. Of course it has its defects, like all stuff.
Of course, yeah. I mean, especially considering all of the disadvantages you had at the time, of course, being a third-party developer on the Super Nintendo, and then... You know, obviously all those hardware limitations as far as, you know, getting everything on the same cart and having it all good to go. I mean, honestly, I've you know, having played through it myself, I think it's a really, you know, no one really talks about it, which is a shame, because I think it's a really cool little game that got passed by that I think a lot of people would really enjoy if they gave it a shot.
Well, I feel the same way, and I think that the only drawbacks that I see from the game point of view that were a result of the limitations of the machinery of the day.
Mm-hmm.
Really is just that we did our best to really, really cram stuff into that 8-megabit cart. And I'm very proud of the fact we got quite a variety of terrain with earthly planets and deserts, snow, tropics, volcanics. We had slug ship interiors. We had outer space combat. We had a variety of characters running around and a pretty, I think, sophisticated variety of mechanics we had in that game. And I'm very proud of all that. The only thing is that still to this day, looking back, you know, you feel the want of when you're, you know, hours into the game, you feel the want of new visual material to see.
Sure.
And I think that's something that, you know, only a larger cart would have allowed us to do.
Right.
We would have been able to do it if we had it, but we just didn't. And I think that the only negative reaction I have these days is the same negative reaction I have for almost every darn game I've ever played.
Mm-hmm.
And I play through most games that I ever pick up, which is that they last about twice as long as they ought to, considering.
Well, it's funny you should say that. The last person that we had on the show was Lewis Castle.
And Lou.
Do you know Lewis?
Oh, Lou, very well.
Okay, well, we were talking about The Lion King, and one of the points he brought up was how Disney's one of their big points was that they had to make it longer. It needed to be longer so that a person couldn't beat it with a rental.
Yeah.
And so he talks about all these levels that, like, had to be artificially padded. Would you say there was any padding going on in Big Sky Trooper, or was it just maybe it just went on a little too long?
It wasn't really padding, because I was personally conscious of this. No one had to tell me to make it the length it was. I just knew.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I just knew from other games that I had played that if it was any shorter, it wouldn't stand up in the competitive world.
Sure.
all. So we did our best. And but still, I mean, in a world that wasn't dominated by these very peculiar sorts of commercial considerations, you know, I would have made the game half as long. It would be much more fun.
Sure.
But that's also true of almost all games. It's not just a question of SNES carts and rentals. It's a question of...
of everything, really. I mean, you should always be left wanting more.
Well, yeah, and the only hope for this, I believe, is in the kind of the download casual game world, where there are some games that are very entertaining and they seem to last just about the right amount of time.
Oh, sure. I mean, you know, I think, honestly, my favorite game platform right now is Xbox Live Arcade.
Just there
because,
you go.
You know, I drop $8 or $10 or whatever, I get a game that lasts, you know, 2 or 3 hours, and I'm completely satisfied with it.
Yep.
You know, it feels just the right length. Like, one of my favorite games from last year, I don't know if you played it, but you really should if you haven't, was Splosion Man.
No, I haven't. I've seen it. I've actually watched it quite a bit, and I took the controls briefly, and yes, it's funny, and it's a wonderful game.
It's one of my favorites from last year, and that game is, I mean, no, if it came out as a disc game, no one would have bought it. It would have made no money, and you know, rightly so. I mean, who would pay $60 for a game like that? But for the price point that it was at, with the content that it had, it was honestly one of my favorites. But do you think there's any sort of maybe a second life for Big Sky Trooper in the download market?
You know, I don't know what will ever happen to it. The ROMs are floating around. You can certainly go and get them. I can play it on Windows 7 as well as my little handheld device. And, it's a little bit cooler to look at it on a tiny screen because then the art just seems wonderful.
It really pops, yeah.
Yeah, and, you know, when you've got it splashed all over your giant monitor, well, maybe not so impressive.
Exactly. Yeah. But, when you're looking on it like a 1080p screen, it doesn't necessarily, you know, look as nice as it did, you know, back in the day.
Yeah, but I guess one of the observations I have is that, you know, in all those years, we're talking about a game that I conceived almost 20 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And I look around at other new games that are coming along. Now, we're not talking about social games online, which are novel, and we're not talking about MMOs, which are novel.
Right.
But when it comes to single-player games, in terms of gameplay, there really hasn't been that much change. The games are very similar to the way they were. It's just that the art is so much better, and the expressivity is better, and mm-hmm. you know, everything is much more suave.
So, you know? What would you say have been like the really notable innovations in gaming then, like things that are truly different than they were, 20 years ago?
I think, in addition to the two ideas I just mentioned, I think mm-hmm. both those are the new thing. But in addition to that, I guess I would say the web. Both in the casual download space and also in the web game kind of arena.
Okay. So moving past Big Sky Trooper.
I should also say one other thing.
Okay.
I got to put a plug in here.
I think, especially the
last thing I just mentioned, the download area and kind of the web area.
All right.
We're talking about the rise of the indie project. I think that's a big deal.
Definitely. Honestly, who was paying attention to like indie game festivals 5 or 6 years ago?
No, there's a group of people who, Chris Hecker, Jonathan Blow, various people who have championed this, and now there's a whole thing called Indiecade. You know, there's a venue now for festivals and
absolutely,
and as in addition to Kongregate and all the websites, and I think that this is it's wonderfully encouraging to see this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, you know, you see games like Braid a couple of years back, which I think it was one or two guys made, and
that's awesome. Yeah,
yeah. I mean, it was what everyone was talking about for a few weeks. You know, it really got held up, which is I think really you know as gaming,
I like World of Goo better, but that's okay.
World of Goo, that's a pretty popular game on our site. A lot of people like that game a lot. But something that I think is really interesting is that, you know, as games get bigger on, you know, on the disc-based releases, everyone talks about how the age of the garage game is dead, you know, where it's just a few guys getting together, making a game, and putting it out. But I think that's really migrated to the online space, you know, games that you would play on either a downloadable on a console or indefinitely, obviously, in the PC arena.
Right, and I think that the other place it's migrated is to the renaissance of mobile games.
Mm-hmm. Oh, absolutely.
Once, Once the iPhone got going, it took mobile games a long time to get rolling in America, where we don't rate for trains very often.
Right.
And, you know, and so finding time to play these things, and you know, you watch the commercials and movies these days instead of sitting playing your game. So it took a while to get rolling, but now you don't just have to play Bejeweled or bowling. That's suddenly a tremendous variety of stuff that's out there for iPhones.
All right. All right, so after 1985, when Big Skyscraper was released, where did you go from there? What was your next project afterwards?
Well, I was busy working on a couple of adventure games that I was very interested in, and the adventure game market kind of tanked. Mm-hmm. And the sign of the tanking, sad to say, was Grim Fandango, Tim Schafer's game at LucasArts. When that game cost a lot more than they thought it was going to, it started to squeeze my opportunity. And when they realized, before it came out actually, but just as they were doing the market research right at the end, they said, whoops, this is terrible, and you can't do your adventure game anymore.
Really? So,
yeah, that's the only couple of times that I really ever got canceled in the game business. But what happened instead was, at the same time I was doing that, there was no name for this in those days, but I was busy developing a couple of casual games. Mm-hmm. The first one was called Indiana Jones and His Desktop Adventures. That's not how I started it. The company wouldn't consider publishing it if I didn't attach a
license.
Yeah, a license, and which drove me crazy. And then the second one, also another license, was an improvement of that idea called Yoda Stories. Mm-hmm. And Yoda Stories is another game which I'm very proud of. It's a replayable story game. It's kind of like a little RPG action adventure campaign, but you can treat it as separate adventures. Each one takes, I don't know, 40 minutes if you want to get going on it. Mm-hmm. And it has like 15 different nominal scenarios, but each time you pick one, even if you've played it before, it'll do new puzzles and new locations and so forth, and that's pretty clever. And so I did a couple of those. I'm very pleased with those and how they turned out, and I still love them. But in those days, I especially with the Jones game, I got very badly reviewed for it, and the reason I think was that they expected LucasArts to wave the flag of ever better graphics, and it was deliberately tile graphics, it was deliberately retro.
Right.
Not looking back, what you're looking at are two very early examples of casual games, which have since taken over. You know, so that's really what's going on there, and that's what I did next. It took that was really wonderful. Now, compared to Big Sky Trooper, which absorbed nearly 4 years of my life, 3.5.
Right.
I did the other two games in about a year altogether. So
I'm sure it was nice to kind of, you know, actually have an idea and execute it in a reasonable amount of time.
It was a delicious experience. There, right. You know, building games is always what I think of as joyful labor. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't rather do anything else, but it's rarely fun.
Yeah. All right, well, so what are you up to these days, then? If people want to follow your work, what can they look forward to?
Well, a couple of things. I'm a writer and designer. I'm a freelancer. Mm-hmm. And every now and then design something for somebody, and every now and then I write something for somebody. Mm-hmm. For example, there's a game, a Facebook game called Mobsters 2. I did a lot of missions and a lot of the mission text for that game, and that's the sort of thing that I do these days. Mm-hmm. I also work on a number of small projects of my own, which may or may not see the light of day. We'll find out. And check my website, I guess, every now and then, and maybe something will pop up sooner or later.
Gotcha. All right. So again, then that's finitearts.com.
Yep.
All righty. Well, Hal, thank you so much for stopping by to talk with me. I really appreciate it. I know the readers of the site are definitely going to appreciate it.
And I'm tickled and very pleased to find out that you got yourself interested in this very odd old game.
That's what I shoot for. That's I want to pick games that people aren't expecting.
Well, make me look good.
You got hey, it's all being recorded, so it's all on the record.
Okay. Nice to chat with you.
No problem at all, sir. You have a good one.
You too.
Bye-bye.